Today's program has been brought to you by Tri-State Merchants, specializing in credit, debit, and check processing solutions for a wide spectrum of merchants. For more information, visit tmsmerchant.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, it is 3 p.m. on Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. I am your host, Rachel Wharton. I am joined today by my occasional guest host, John Taggart. Say hello, John.
Hey, what's up?
And Farmer Zach Pickens. Say hello, Zach.
Good afternoon.
So, Zach is probably one of only, like, there can't be very many full-time farmers in Manhattan, but Zach is one of them. He works at River Park, which you should go check out, way over at 29th and...
29th and First Avenue.
The river. It's basically on the river. It's called River Park. But he is here today to talk about a smaller company that he runs on the side, a company that's practically seed size. It's called Rooftop Ready, and he grows Rooftop Ready seeds. So start by telling us how your seeds are different than what I might find at my local hardware store.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I'm growing a stock of open pollinated seeds, which means that you can grow them for seed and save them and replant. And, you know, one advantage of open pollinated then is that you can actually select the traits that, you know, that you're seeing in your plant growth that you like. So, you know, when you're growing in containers, when you're growing on rooftops that have extreme heat, extreme sun exposure, extreme wind, you know, that's going to stress your plants out. And, you know, for the past 5 years, I've been growing out plants and selecting those that have done the best in that environment, and selecting for, you know, basically resistance to those things.
So city rooftops, the plants you're picking out for to keep their seeds are the ones that are thriving.
Exactly.
At the top of a tall building.
Exactly. And it's also, you know, selecting certain varieties that are best for container growth that have small enough root systems that can be grown in containers. Ideally, I mean, you know, all of these seeds can be grown in the country, in the ground, but they've been tailored to this environment specifically. We do, you know, we have the issue of, like, urban heat island effect in the city as well, where, you know, our temperatures are consistently at least like 5 degrees higher than just even Westchester. And we have, you know, warmer nights as well, just consistently warmer temperatures. And so when the temperature spikes here, it's way worse than in the country. So your plants have to be able to like hold up to it.
Did you start doing this because you needed to? Because otherwise you couldn't find the seeds that would work?
No, I didn't. Yeah, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you know, you can grow, you know, it's not like nothing else grows here. But,
right.
But you know, I think one motivation for me is that, you know, I moved to New York in 2007 and I grew up in rural Ohio. And so, like, it's, you know, I wanted to garden here, and all I had was a roof, and it's like, well, this is not natural, you know? Like, what do I do? And I, you know, it's just been a constant process of learning how to do it better. And I think that if we're starting with better seed for this climate and people have more success with it, they're going to be more likely to keep doing it. And that's something that motivates me, and like why a part of the reason why I started this company is because I want people to do this well.
Uh-huh.
I want more people to be gardening and to have success and to like show their friends and be like, look, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, I grew this in this little box or something.
So this is the second year that you've been selling seeds.
Yeah.
So I guess have people been able to grow them out once or twice? How many growing seasons does that include?
At this point, if someone were to have like bought my seeds last year, they could have saved seed from those plants and replanted them this year. So it'd be second generation in the ground right now.
I bought them at the pop up farm store that we were lucky enough to have in Brooklyn. And I planted lettuce because it's gangbusters, and I have one little guy still left there so that I can hopefully collect some seed, which probably, I think lettuce produces a bazillion seeds.
Yeah.
But so I'm especially curious, how I know the steps to seed saving, what you have to do. I know there are a lot of them, and it looks so easy. You can buy them for like 25 cents in a hardware store, but there's a lot of work. So how does it begin? It's like, I can start with, like, start at the beginning.
With the seed.
So, start with the plant. Like, you know, like you're up there on your roof, it's fall or whatever.
Sure. I mean, and it's just so interesting, like, how, you know, like when you save seed, you see plants in a different way because you're seeing it like go through its full life cycle. And so, like, you know, it's interesting that, like, when we eat lettuce, we're taking it early, you know, like we're taking it before it's fully mature. When it's fully mature, it's got a 4-foot seed stalk or seed shoot up in the air with a bunch of flowers on it and everything. And you know, so we're actually just taking the young baby leaves. And so when you save seed, you see it through its full life cycle, which is really interesting. And it just varies depending on the variety. You know, some seeds you collect in the spring because the plants need to overwinter. They need a cold period, you know, before they'll actually bolt and go to seed. Some you just got to plant them in the spring and just wait, you know. But, you know, for your lettuce, for instance, you plant the seed. It's going to take about, you know, a month to get a nice head of lettuce that you would want to eat. You know, and then at that point, you just let it go. It's going to take about another month before you start to see the seed stock. And another month for the seeds to actually show up. So, I mean, it takes a lot of time. So
you had been farming for years, like since you were a little kid, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, working with my parents in the gardens, and my grandparents had a really large garden that we always helped out in.
Did you collect seed before?
No.
So some of these plants in their seed stage, you'd never seen either.
Yeah, no. It kind of started as an experiment, and the more I, you know, did it, and the more I thought about it, it's like, oh, this, you know, this makes sense. This is good. Yeah.
So what was the first one you let go? Was it, did they just accidentally like ghost bolt, or did you let them go to seed on purpose?
I think I may have stolen some bolted plants from Added Value when I was working there.
Uh-huh.
That was one case where I'd started to see some, you know, plants in a different form, and it was really interesting to me, and like really fascinated by the idea of not having to go buy a seed. You just which plant go, you know, and you get like thrift. Exponentially more seeds, you know.
What do you remember what plants they were?
I think the first big seed saving project that I worked on, you know, that was like a lot of seed that would make sense for a farm was broccoli rabe that had bolted in their field, and I processed probably 4 ounces of seed or something. I mean,
really?
it was a lot. You know,
because broccoli rabe is expensive to buy. I don't see broccoli rabe seed all that often. You have to order it special.
Yeah, and so that was just kind of a fun process. And you know, I'd been saving spinach at that point before that. I mean, that's the oldest variety I have is a Bloomsdale spinach, which is a really nice like winter variety.
Oh wait, you brought one. So
yes.
Let's like take it out and let's describe it. Like, okay, so this, but I think we need to go back a step. Is that when people buy your seeds, they get a lovely little packet with a hand printed label that was done by one of your friends. They're totally beautiful. And then they go on your site,
Eric Collins.
And then they go on your site to see instructions on how to plant them.
Yeah.
But you brought me like a couple of steps before that. So you brought me what this spinach looks like. I guess like, okay, so tell me what we're looking at here.
Yeah,
it looks like it does look like weed. It looks like
some
old
nugs.
Crappy seedy weed that you bought when you were like in 10th grade.
Exactly.
That's what it looks like.
I've been saving it since 10th grade actually. This is not spinach. So what we're looking at is once the spinach,
so cool,
you let it go, the seed stalk
green
shoots up the middle, and there's actually male and female spinach plants, and so I have the female, like the, you know, the tops of the female plants in my hand, and they're just like,
how can you tell?
Because that's the only ones that have seeds on them, and it's the round, you know, the round seeds. The male provides the pollen, and so you actually, like when your plants bolt, you're actually looking for male and female plants, like which ones have pollen and which ones don't. And you need a certain amount of male plants. It's you know, like
to pollinate the female so that she actually produces seeds.
Exactly.
Damn.
And so then the seeds start to form on the stalk in little clusters. And so if you think spinach seeds are just like little round, very, very tiny, like little pebbles kind of thing, and they form in clusters along the seed stalk. So, you know, to pull them off, what I do is I let the plants go entirely, and then I just cut the whole plant out and dry it. And then all you have to do then is just run your fingers over it and just break them off, and they'll just crumble into individual seeds. And that's all. I mean, that's it. You don't have to really clean them or anything. So then
when you have like bushels of those things for your seed company.
Yeah.
How do you make them pretty and clean? What do you do?
There is,
and where are you doing this?
Well, my fiance is probably not too happy about the fact that I do it like at the kitchen table or like, but you know, I mean, I have a bit of space I can use at River Park, which is nice. Like, it's an indoor space that can get dirty, so you know, I like to control it, because if I have to winnow the seeds, which
that's
is
the technical term.
Yeah, that's the process of separating, like that you know, term or that cliche, like separating the chaff from the seed. Like, that's basically what you're doing, is you're winnowing. You use just light air to get the light leaves to blow away, and then you're left with the heavier seeds, like the relatively heavier seeds.
Wait, so are you blowing on them?
Or using a fan, uh-huh. Yeah.
So the stuff goes all over your floor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then you're left with, like, how many, like, when you did spinach, Brookdale spinach.
Bloomsdale.
Bloomsdale.
Yeah.
So wait. What's the Bloomsdale spinach like? Why is it special? Where did it come from?
It was first grown in Pennsylvania, and it was actually from it was started by the Landry Seed Company, which is still exists to this day, and they do a lot of really good open pollinated seed to this day. But it was in the 1800s or early 1900s that they started Bloomsdale spinach. I mean, the reason I like it, it's a nice like Savoy leaf spinach. I think it's really like a hearty spinach. I mean, it's got a really like deep flavor as far as spinach goes, and it overwinters really well. It loves like cold weather. I mean, in fact, this past year, since our winter was not that cold, like I could tell that it wasn't quite ideal for that variety, but yeah, I mean, it loves like a really cold winter. So that means also that, you know, if you plant this at home, like you plant it in the fall, it'll just keep growing all winter. And if you give it a little bit of cover, you could harvest it through the winter too. So.
And then in the spring even, I guess.
Yeah, and when the spring comes, it'll just start coming like crazy. So.
And then will it go to seed really fast?
Usually, it depends on, you know, the health of the plant. It depends on the temperatures in the spring. But yeah, it'll be around like April or May, and then the seed will mature about a month. So I picked all of these in June.
Oh, the ones in right there.
Yep.
And you hung on to them. That's so cool. Well, so I guess just to step back, that's actually another reason why what you do is so interesting, is because you have these amazing varieties of delicious plants that are perfect for where we're living now.
Yeah.
So it's very cool.
Yeah. Do you have any tomatillo plants right now?
I do. Yeah, personally. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're becoming very popular.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we looked really hard for tomatillo starts.
Oh,
we didn't
really
find them. Yeah.
Oh man, it's too bad.
Wait, so we're gonna take a short break. So I don't want to even get into the winnowing beforehand. But when I also want to talk about tomato and tomatillo seeds, because those are super funky, right?
Yeah.
Those are really hard to do. So this is, I think I want to go in like plant by plant. I think this is the most fascinating. Am I the only one? I just find this incredibly awesome. Okay, so we're gonna take a short break, and we'll be back for more of Meet Your Maker with Seed Savers Extraordinaire.
From Roberta's.
Things quickly, fortune. This program is sponsored by Tri-State Merchant Services. If you are a business owner, then you are processing credit or debit cards and checks. Providers for these services can be large, faceless companies who take your business for granted. But at Tri-State Merchant Services, your satisfaction is our priority, and we strive to earn your business every day. We offer more than just credit card processing. We provide valuable insight, solutions, and practical tools for streamlining your business. What's more, while we have the manpower of the leading processors, we never lose sight of the fact that every business starts small and that together we can do big things. At Tri-State Merchant Services, we believe in working with local businesses to strengthen our community. A strong community builds a strong economy. Check out our partner referral program and all of our services at tmsmerchant.com.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. We are talking to full-time farmer Zach Pickens, who in his spare time runs a seed company called Rooftop Ready Seeds. And when we last left you, the spinach was dried, it was on the countertop table, and we were about to winnow. All right, so what happens next?
All right, this is where it gets messy. Spare time, by the way. I like how you said that.
Farmers have a ton of spare time. Yeah, exactly.
This is why I'm fortunately growing some of this stuff at River Park, so I can just never leave there. You know, I can do my side stuff there as well.
Oh yeah, because when you leave the restaurant, they have a packet of seeds. It's like what you get to take, right? It's rosemary.
Yeah,
I need to plant it.
Yeah,
I've never grown rosemary from seed.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's very small seeds, so you gotta be real careful with it.
I'm gonna dump, yes.
It can
okay.
Be done.
So back to the spinach.
All right, so the spinach is pretty easy because usually you don't have too much of the like leafy matter left behind, and it's big enough that you can even use like a screen sometimes to just get the you know, leave the spinach behind, and like the little bits of leaf might fall through. So that's one way to do it. In fact, like there's, you know, you can screen seed off, like maybe use. For like mustard greens, for instance, the seeds are really small, so you can use one where they'll just fall through and the leaf stuff stays behind. But then usually you still have to winnow a little bit. And the way that you do that is you take your big like pile of seed and chaff and everything, and you know, usually it's good to use a bowl, or we have endless amounts of white plastic fish tubs at River Park. And I use those,
which are left over from fish deliveries.
Yeah, yeah, they're plastic tubs from fish deliveries that we use. That I actually use them a lot for the seed processing too.
You're actually processing seeds as we speak.
Yeah. So.
Oh, so you're gonna demonstrate?
Yeah. This is incredibly incriminating. Looking through the glass.
I think that might actually happen in here. time.
Not that big of a deal. But yeah, I'm also gonna make a mess. But basically, what you can do then, you have your seeds and you have the leafy matter. The leafy matter is a lot lighter than the seeds. So you can either have it in like a bowl and place it in front of a fan on low, like a box fan on the low setting. I mean, it needs to be like just very gentle breeze. And what you do is you just kind of like shake the bowl around, you know, just like swirl the seeds around and kind of maybe toss them up in there a little bit. The chaff will get caught by the wind and blow away, and you'll be left with the seeds.
Is that what they do in big seed companies too? Some bigger version of that?
They have to some degree, but I know that they use a lot more like bigger screens. They have like specific size screens for like specific kinds of.
Do you make your own screens by any chance?
Or? No, I haven't quite gotten there. I'm kind of doing it the hard way for now because of just the volume is not like super big. But yeah, I mean, you could have grated screens and
or windows. You just use window screen.
Yeah, you could use window screen. You can use like a colander or a sifter, right. Or like just kitchen implements. You know, are fine for this. So, or you know, you can just, if you don't have a fan or don't want to use it, you can just lightly blow, just really, really lightly, and you can see. that, like, mainly, I'm blowing too hard here, but that, yeah, 90% of what's blowing away is the leafy plant matter, and then the seeds are left behind. And then usually...
Those are bigger seeds than I expected for spinach.
Yeah, they are pretty large. And then usually I'll put it through a screen one more time, like a really small one, so that any like little bits will fall through, so you're not getting a pack of shake.
Which is fine. Which is like, if you're doing this at home, you can plant a little bit of it. It's fine. But it's, like, if you're selling seeds, they should be beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be right.
The other one you brought is collard greens, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were telling us a little bit before we started that those require a different technique, right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, this is one of my favorite things to grow, too. And, I mean, I like growing them in the fall because they're a lot more tender if you grow them in the fall. And they'll overwinter really well. So the collards actually grow in all brassicas, actually, like the same family as kale. It's the same family as broccoli, all mustard greens, arugula. They grow a shoot, again, and it'll have a lot of flowers on it. Once those are pollinated, they form seed pods that kind of look like really tiny green beans or something like that.
Dried green beans.
Yeah, and then what you want to do is like, what I do is I'll let them mature, so the seed pods will actually like dry out on the plant, and then you cut the entire plant off, and you can use like a big bucket. I mean, I've sometimes even put them in a pillowcase or something like that, or a large trash can. And you just take the whole plant while it's, you know, when it's dried out, and just bang it against the side of the trash can to get the seeds to fall out. So the pods will actually explode, mm-hmm. and all the seeds will fall into the bottom of the trash can.
That's threshing.
Yeah, threshing.
Which is what you do for, rice?
Yeah, I believe so. And wheat.
Wheat. That's so cool.
Yeah.
All right, and then you still have to clean them, though.
Yeah, and then you have to do the winnowing process again. But for the most part, that's really easy because these are such small seeds, and most of what's left behind is like a really large seed pod. So, and that also blows away very easily. So,
what kind of, why do you like these collards? What are these? Tell us about these.
These are Vates, which is a pretty standard variety, but I mean, this is something that I just like growing personally. So this is something that I've been saving for a while and just wanted to get out there. I don't know. Collards got a bad reputation or something like that.
Yeah, I'm from North Carolina, so I definitely love collards.
Yeah.
And I just got back from a trip to Ireland where I visited the country's only, I think there's two CSAs, and I've visited the second one. And I think Irish cabbage looks just like collards, because it doesn't head.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you had any intel on that, if it's actually the same thing. But it's, I think they're really, and I like eating them in every state. I like eating the stems. I think they're awesome.
Yeah.
Why is this one good for a rooftop or a container?
I mean, it's pretty much the same logic where, you know, it's something that's grown very well and succeeded through the hot summers, but, you know, it's lasted through the winters as well, and in containers too. I mean, it's seriously, like, growing in containers is a really unique, you know, growing medium or method, and I mean, I know way too much about that from River Park,
because like, everything grows in what, I guess they're milk crates.
Yeah, so it's all container growing, like 3500 milk crate planters, so.
30, that's totally amazing.
Yeah,
because this, so like seed, like root systems have to adapt well to being bound up and
exactly
dense.
It's really also cool. A matter of, especially with bigger crops like tomatoes and peppers and things like that, you actually, you know, the whole container is going to be full of roots, and that means that like watering is going to be really important. And so you need a plant that can really maybe handle some swells and you know, like water and heavy water, light water, that kind of thing.
Right,
so
go from drought to flood and drought to flood.
Exactly.
How was yesterday for you?
That was flood.
It was so nice.
Hard to remember. Because you didn't have to water?
Yeah, because this morning all we had to do was water some tomatoes that didn't get hit by the rain.
Yeah, for those listening, we had a huge rainstorm in New York.
I'm glad you brought up tomatoes, because we have like 6 minutes left, and I totally want to hear, because harvesting tomato, you said it was just about to begin, so tell us about tomato seeds.
Tomato, yeah, this is where it gets kind of gross. Like, this is where you can start turning people off. So if you have a bunch of roommates, like, do this in your room. Like. So the tomato seeds actually have a protective, like, jelly membrane around the outside of the seed. And the reason is because there's so much water in a tomato you know, it's adapted, or it's, you know, evolved to the point where it has this protective membrane so it doesn't germinate inside the tomato. And so you have to break down that membrane, and you do that by fermenting the seeds. And I mean, it's simple at the beginning, and then it gets kind of icky, but like, basically you scrape out the gelatinous part of the tomato, like, that has all the seeds in it. You put it in, I mean, I use mason jars for most everything, like when I'm doing this processing and seed storage and everything. But so as much liquid as that you collect from the tomatoes, so say you get like an inch, like maybe 2 ounces of tomato seed juice, like, then you put 2 ounces of water in, to make it 50-50 water and tomato. And then you mix it up, and you let it sit for 2 to 3 days, basically until you see a white film. It's mold that grows on top of the water layer, and it smells terrible, and it looks really gross, and it might attract bugs. But what it's doing is, you know, like essentially, like, the natural bacteria and everything like that is breaking down that membrane around the seed. So then you will throw the whole liquid in a strainer, strain off the liquid, wash it off. You'll, like, really press the seeds against the strainer and wash all of the gunk off. And then you lay them out on a flat surface to dry, and they're good to go.
And you do the same thing with anything in that family, or just, like, tomatillos? You wouldn't have to do it with eggplant or other nightshades?
Yeah, tomatoes are pretty specific in that way.
Even, like, tomatillos don't require that either?
Tomatillos, I process ground cherries about the same way as tomatillos, and that you really, what you can do is put them in a blender, and it doesn't, believe it or not, it doesn't, like, break down the seed. And this works really well for peppers as well. I mean, peppers you can scrape out, or you can just
let them dry.
Yeah, exactly. But for tomatillo and, like, ground cherries, which is something that I sell, and I love ground cherries, and I got, like, the one I've been growing is so sweet, it's ridiculous. I just love them. But you put them in a blender, and you like, blend it really, really, really smooth, and then you put water, put it in a mason jar with some water, and stir it up, and the seeds will actually sink towards the bottom because they're heavy. I mean, the ones that are viable are, like, the ones that are healthy and, like, will become a plant. They're heavy. There's a lot in the seed itself, and it'll sink to the bottom, and you pour off the kind of plant matter that rises to the top, and you have to do that, like, 3 or 4 or 5 times, and then you're left finally with just the seeds.
So how does the tomato take care of all that in nature?
It would just, like, the tomato would fall off the plant
and
it
ferment,
would rot.
Right there.
Yeah, it would fall and splatter and rot, and then the membrane would break down, seed would be germinated.
That's so. Do you sell tomato seeds?
Yeah, oh, mainly cherries. Yeah, mainly
cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, I've got one really, really productive variety that's a yellow cherry tomato called Blondkopfchen, and it's a
Blondkopfchen?
Yeah, it's a German heirloom that, I mean, it'll grow like 100 tomatoes on one kind of tuft of flowers, and so it really does look, it means like little blonde head in German. And
sweet 100s, that's, it's essentially what it's, that, because it's like all those rows of tomatoes that you see them in the packs, and like,
yeah, I mean, it's even more than that. It's little,
wow,
little, like, probably half an inch diameter tomatoes, that
smaller,
just huge clumps. I mean, like, last year I counted a clump of like 80 tomatoes. It was ridiculous.
And now, what's the deal, what is this, the Jersey tomatoes, what makes them so special?
it's a lot of it is the soil. I mean, like, the sandy soil, and also, like, just the temperature patterns in that part of the country.
Wait, so if you grew it, Jersey tomato here, it wouldn't be the same at all?
I mean, you can always, that's the thing with containers, you can always change your soil components. You can add sand, you can, you know, add more organic matter if you need to, whatever. Like, I mean, I'm growing blueberries now, and they need really sandy soil. It's just another thing that Jersey does pretty well. And so, you know, I had to add like almost a whole bag of play sand to this huge container for blueberry bush.
That's at River Park.
No, that's on my roof, actually.
Roof.
Yeah.
How do you, wait, how would you, for blueberry, like, is the whole thing a seed? How does that, it's got a million little tiny seeds.
It gets a little, that's almost above my pay grade when it comes to grafting fruit trees. So.
Oh, because most, like, it's like, I can't even imagine starting a blueberry from a seed.
Yeah, it's pretty unreliable. So.
We are almost out of time, so we have to go through like all the different ways people can find you. For starters, they can come see you farm and see this in, see this in action at River Park, which is 29th and 3rd, right on the water.
Public tours Tuesdays at 12:30.
And you can I think in you also like if you go eat there, you get a little seed pack when you leave. But then, as he was saying before, if you've ever gardened or you have any intention to, you could check out his site rooftopready.com because you have some seed packets that are perfect for fall. So you can do that now. You don't have to wait till next summer. You haven't missed the boat. All right, this has been Meet Your Maker, and we've met with Zach Pickens from Rooftop Ready.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today.
Thanks for listening.